justice for the human family we demanded. Justice, truth, freedom, equality's a must. Us decolonization of the planet, so bust this. People be the power, now we build the justice. Pouring ancestral divination, how we build the justice. Welcome the planet to the podcast, build the justice. Build the justice, build the justice, build. Is to add on or do away with it. Justice.
Today's episode is about alternatives to campus policing. What do these alternatives look like? How can we reimagine safety for everyone on our campuses? Welcome to Building Justice, a podcast by Sacramento State's Center on Race, Immigration, and Social Justice. We explore critical issues affecting our communities with the hopes of creating a healthier and more just world. My name is Alexa Sardina, and I am here with Professor Eddie Cole to dive deeper into the dialogue around campus policing. I'm an assistant professor in the Division of Criminal Justice at CSU Sacramento and also the Faculty Rights Co-Chair of the California Faculty Association's Sacramento chapter. Professor Cole is an associate professor of higher education and history at the University of California, Los Angeles, and he is the author of the multi-prize-winning book, The Campus Color Line, College Presidents and the Struggle for Black Freedom. He has received grants and fellowships from the Woodrow Wilson National Fellowship Foundation, the Spencer Foundation, the National Academy of Education, the University of Chicago, and Princeton University. He has published in the Washington Post, the LA Times, and Chronicle of Higher Education, and has served as an expert commentator for BBC World News and MSNBC, among others. So after hearing that lengthy and important bio, I wanted to just point out Professor Cole's expertise in the field. So thank you so much for being here today, Professor Cole.
Hey, thanks for having me.
The inspiration for today's episode really stemmed from our union's commitment to anti-racism and social justice efforts, which includes examining alternatives to campus policing. But to start us off, I think it's important for listeners to learn a bit about the roots of campus policing before we dig into why alternatives are necessary. So I'm wondering if you can share with us a little bit about that history.
Yeah, well, much of my work focuses on college presidents and university chancellors during the mid-20th century. And that's the time period where we see the expansion of campus police. And so to a certain extent, there'd always been sort of some level of policing on campus. But what we see in the 1940s and 1950s, and certainly into the 1960s, this rapid expansion and development of departments that looks a lot like what we see on campus today. But when you think about the broader history of U.S. higher education, that wasn't always the case. And so we have to think, as you think about this conversation, framing it around sort of alternatives and thinking differently, when you think about the history of higher education, police departments weren't always a part of it. And really, the origins of sort of modern day campus policing, really the expansion comes from post-World War II and the Great Migration. It's a direct connection between millions of Black Americans leaving the U.S. South, moving to major cities outside of the South, such as the New York, Boston, Philadelphia, Chicago, Detroit, etc. And then because of racial restrictions on where people could live, oftentimes these neighborhoods where Black people found themselves landing when moving into these cities were near major universities because these neighborhoods weren't always predominantly Black. And so you think about sort of a University of Pennsylvania, it's in West Philadelphia. Columbia University is right next to Harlem. University of Chicago, it's on the south side of Chicago, right? And these are historically prominently Black areas, right? And over time, migration shifts made university leaders, to be very frank, white university leaders, think about sort of how they could insulate their campuses away from the community, right? Being open enough to enroll some Black students, to have some Black faculty and staff, but not too much Blackness. And so a lot of justification for the expansion of policing was this idea of Black crime. And as historian Khalil Gibran Muhammad has explained in his great book, The Condemnation of Blackness, even those crime stats were faulty to a certain extent. And so university leaders in the mid-20th century justified the expansion of campus policing and the expansion of campus itself around this idea of Black crime. And it just sort of snowballed into what we see today.
I mean, I think it's really important, too, because a lot of times I think There's this sense or belief amongst folks that, you know, somehow campus police are less of a threat. They're not dangerous compared to, you know, municipal police departments. But I think when you put the history in context, you can start to see more of the similarities, you know, between the two. Can you talk a little bit more about that, you know, where that sort of perception comes from this less dangerousness to the realities of how campus police treat students and faculty, and specifically students and faculty of color?
Yeah, that's a great question. And you have to flip the question, right? When people say, oh, well, you know, maybe campus police, you know, kind of functions different from sort of municipal police. But in reality, when you think about what universities say today, and they, you know, it's clockwork, universal, almost in terms of promoting diversity and inclusion, wanting racial equity on campuses, right? But when you think about how does it feel to be a Black faculty member or a Black staff member who's leaving the building late trying to get home, or a Black student on campus, I don't think necessarily the feeling of looking at campus police feels any different from looking at, say, the city's police, right?
While statistics on race and campus police incidents in the CSU system are not widely available, there have been many cases of faculty of color being racially profiled by UPD across the CSU. In the recent Sacramento State Anti-Racism and Inclusive Campus Plan, one faculty member of color reported, "I have been pulled over by campus police while walking and driving on campus. Once I was forced out of the car and onto the curb. Two campus police detained me in a long series of questions as to why I was on campus so late." Furthermore, a survey of Sacramento State students completed by Associated Students, Inc. in September of 2021 showed that 43% of students shared concerns about police on our campus, while only 17% of students shared positive comments.
A perfect example coming out of Northwestern University in late 2020. There are a lot of protests on that campus up in Evanston, Illinois, to where Black students on that campus made up 6% of the student body. The stats just don't bear out. And so a lot of people of color on, especially on predominantly white campuses, find themselves still very much interacting with police at a disproportionately negative level than they would whether they were off campus or on campus.
You know, I think, too, there's been a lot of conversation around whether we're talking about campus police or police off campus, is that somehow training and policy change within the police force is going to address issues of police brutality or racial profiling. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that.
Well, to a certain extent, we have to start thinking about broader operational changes, right? And not just sort of a one-off training, right? If we just sort of, our new hires are trained differently, then everything right. would be different. That's the fun part about my job. I get to say, well, history just doesn't provide that sort of evidence that that's the case. And so it's something that's clear from the past. And when you think about sort of campus policy and administrative decision-making, you have to start sort of rethinking at large how things work, right? And what are the overall mission and goals of a department like campus policing? And does it align with sort of the academic mission? Because in a lot of ways, sure, you know, when you think of campus safety, it should have a different function in some extent compared to sort of municipal responsibilities. But in a lot of ways, that's just not the case. And so something when I'm giving these talks, I like to say you really can't solve decades, if not centuries, of racial bias with one training, right? It just doesn't happen with one program. So all of a sudden, you know, when we talk about sort of using police as justification to expand in the 1940s and 1950s, we're really coming up on 70, 80 years of this question around who should and shouldn't be allowed within campus spacing. And I don't think one training in 2023 is going to address that. We have to think about operational changes. How can we do higher education differently to where everybody on campus, be it employee or student, feels welcome enough to sort of move about campus and grow and be a positive contribution to the broader educational enterprise?
And, you know, it sounds to me very much like what we hear after a deadly shooting or murder of a person of color at the hands of the police, where we have, you know, body cam footage and we have people not using chokeholds or all of these things. And we still have people being murdered by police. And despite these changes or these trainings, there seems to be something inherent within police organizations that cannot be addressed by a training or by different uses of different technology and things like that. You know, and that kind of brings me to an interesting question, and I'm curious to hear what your thoughts are, but do you think there is a place for campus police, or do you think that a more abolitionist stance is necessary?
Well, you know, this is the tricky question of all higher education, because every campus has a different context.
Sure.
And so, you know, in the same way that, you know, one size does not fit all on one end, you know, does one size fit all on the other end? I don't know in that regard, but leaning back into your question, I couldn't help but think of the history around sort of the University of Chicago and its expansion of campus policing. And what was the case was there were a ton of sort of off-duty Chicago police who were working on campus. And, you know, this is the 1950s and 1960s. And it makes me sort of think about your question in terms of sort of trying to distinguish the difference between what happens on campus and what happens off campus. Many times these are the same police officers. That's the real point here, right? So, yeah, I might have done 10 years for the city and now I work on campus, right? I might have done 8 years on campus and now I work for the city, right? These are the same individuals moving back and forth. So that's why you have to sort of rethink policing in general, right, on campus. And it is not just sort of something that can be sort of one broad stroke of a brush and say, okay, now we're going to do this. Well, I mean, you got to start thinking about policing in general, and that's the real heart. And so in the same way that police departments were developed in bulk in conversation with municipal leaders and state leaders, there's a lot of federal support, wink, wink, that made these departments happen. The same kind of conversations have to happen now between chancellors and presidents, mayors and city councilmen, state senators and Congress people, right? So you have to start thinking that way. This is a bigger conversation that's going to take a lot of moving parts, because as long as there's local, state, and federal money involved supporting campus police departments, you're going to have sort of local, state, and federal intervention.
Yeah. And our union, CFA, has worked towards passing Assembly Bill 1997. And that basically requires the CSU to bring together a working group of faculty, staff, and students to examine what some alternatives to policing look like and to make recommendations. And hopefully, you know, the CSU will take those recommendations and take some action. As of now, that working group has not been established, although the CSU statewide Alternatives to Campus Policing Committee has been meeting all of this time. So that's to say we're prepared for when that call happens. But as we're thinking about this and talking about sort of reimagining safety and reimagining campus police, a lot of different alternatives have been proposed. And maybe, you know, those alternatives vary based on campus need. What do you see as the most viable alternatives or important reforms that maybe someone like our working group could think about?
Yeah, well, I think since the pandemic of 2020, we've seen the rise in interests and reports around mental health, right? And so this is something I think about often in terms of many of the campus incidents that police are called to respond to may not require your sort of traditional officer with a badge and a weapon, right? But it may actually require a different kind of professional equipped a different way to address the situation. And there's been a terrible underfunding of mental health professionals, counselors, psychiatrists on college campuses across the U.S. That's almost universal. And so if you sort of think about sort of the in-between sort of we need to increase funding or we need to completely abolish campus policing, the in-between might be like, can we sort of rethink the funding that's there? Right. So instead of $1 million budget to an individual campus police department, what if, you know, part of that million went to actually hiring full time staff that could work in different shifts and somebody could be on call to respond at 2 a.m. or 2 p.m. When you think about the stresses of higher education on top of the stresses of society, we're in a much different world than we were simply 3-4 years ago. I mean, in so many ways. And so we really have to genuinely reimagine what we're even doing in higher education, and campus policing is part of it. And I think a viable alternative, a really viable alternative, would be to sort of think about sort of having maybe an officer and a mental health professional show up instead of 2 or 3 officers. Because oftentimes some of these crises, students, staff, you know, faculty, administrators, really don't necessarily need sort of the traditional moment of danger response. They may be in a sort of a different kind of crisis, right? And so we have to sort of rethink all of that. And that will really just take simply looking at the current data around campus police reports and doing an analysis of what was the situation that officers have responded to.
Right. Yeah. On Sacramento State's campus, the budget shift that Dr. Cole mentioned, shifting policing money to mental health care response, would be significant, especially in light of Sacramento State's 2020 to 2021 budget. During this time period, Sacramento State spent over $6.3 million on the campus police department and spent less than half of that, $2.8 million, on the psychological services budget, including administrative costs. Our campus it's a commuter campus. The majority of calls that the police receive, that campus police receive, have to do with, you know, drug or alcohol incidences, students partying. And then the other is mental health crises. And yet we see this increased funding being given to campus policing and far less to mental health, even though, like you said, we're coming, quote unquote, out of the pandemic with a better knowledge of, you know, how mental health is impacting our students. And unfortunately, what we've seen in even the most recent budget is just an increased campus policing and militarization of campus police rather than providing the support that our students need and are looking for.
That's a great comment. And it makes me think so much about, you know, I think a broader campus-wide goal, administrative all the way down to campus police chief. The campus public safety, campus safety should be a goal that we're striving to no longer need.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, instead of increasing the budget, right, we're getting bigger and bigger. We're getting more of everything around campus police. In an ideal world, right? And the world isn't perfect. I understand that. But what I'm saying is when we have the ambitions of higher education, which has always been striving towards the solutions to the most complex problems, right? That's the point of academia, right? We want to solve complex problems. And if crime is a problem, right? And if policing and disproportionality and sort of police stops is a problem, we got to immediately start working towards solutions to that. And it's clear that one solution isn't increasing the budget, because we've been doing that for decades now, and we still have the crime issues, right? And so like everybody, right? This isn't something that if you're a police officer listening, like you should be offended. You want to do away with my career, like, or you police chief administrator, you should be offended. No, this is something like we're all trying to solve problems so that our work in that area is no longer needed. I write about the history of race and racism within U.S. higher education. I would love to not have a sort of a contemporary need to speak to these issues. And trust me, I will find something else to move on to and study. But these problems continue and we continue working on them. And so we've got to start thinking about alternatives.
We've talked a lot about mental health counseling and sort of deploying those folks to mental health distress calls from students and things like that. We've also spoken about how restorative justice or transformative justice work can be used to address, student disagreements between students or bullying between faculty members, which unfortunately is a thing. You know, so I think that there are the alternatives there, but much like with our own criminal legal system, there is such a fear of trying something new.
In regard to sort of giving it a try, you know, or why people are afraid to try, that's probably what I'm most interested in. History gives us so much insight, and to really, it should make us all question about the purpose of higher education, right? There's sort of the stated purpose, and then there's sort of the actual lived and real purpose of higher education. And in so many ways, colleges and universities have been spaces and places to maintain the societal status quo. And that's not anything that, you know, many people want to concede or admit. But when you look at the past and you look at this history of exclusion within American higher education, you look at this history of sort of class difference in access to higher education. You even look at the history of what I mentioned earlier with regard to universities getting bigger and bigger and bigger, which means adjacent communities must get smaller. And so people get priced out or policed out of their neighborhoods. When you look at this history from the 1600s, the 1700s, the 1800s, last century, and now in the 2000s, to a certain extent, when people don't want to change what we're currently doing, it raises a number of questions around sort of their attachment to the status quo, because what we're doing is maintaining what we've always done. And if there's one thing that's clear about American history, what we've always done has been very far from equitable.
Right. Yeah. And I suppose if the status quo is working for you, then, you know, you don't really have a problem with it remaining that way. And, you know, I think a big part of this work has been, in addition, how do, you know, white folks or white allies in this work support our faculty, staff, and students of color as we try and make these changes. So I'm wondering if you can kind of comment on that and how you see universities being able to work together to address these issues.
Well, a couple of things, right? First thing is there are models of success, right? Because when we think about American higher education, our default thought tends to be predominantly white or historically white institutions, but there are tons of colleges and universities that for centuries, now centuries, have been doing this, be it historically black colleges, universities, or a number of tribal colleges and universities that really know how to support people across a range of differences and have been doing so for a very long time. So one, there are models already. So, you know, one, I would say just go look at the people who do this well. All right. The other part in terms of white people who feel, you know, motivated to support, what can they do? You know, a lot of it is these solutions and answers have been before you in many ways. And so instead of sort of taking on the role of, hey, here's what I'm going to do to help, how about ask the people most impacted? what can be done to help? You know, this is what I always, this is a big gripe I always have about higher education, because it's like, oh, we're going to have another community partnership. And I was like, did we come up with that, or did the community tell us that they needed that?
You know, what they needed.
Yeah, right. So the answers are all around us. You know, it's all about stop ignoring those voices and stop silencing these concerns that have been around for so long. So in that way, you just got to listen and then get to work.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point. And I think something that we can take from, you know, restorative justice and transformative justice movements is that it is about centering the community, and it is about, tell me how I can help you get there, but you know best what your community needs. And that's, you know, what I think we kind of need to start thinking about when we have students saying to us, you know, we have a high percentage of students who are experiencing food insecurity on our campus. When we have them seeing the numbers of the money going to the police and barely any money going to address food insecurity, they're saying, we need to eat. We need to feel safe. We need counseling services. And when that's dismissed by administration or not addressed in a meaningful way, we're failing our students. And to me, that's, it's problematic, and it's heartbreaking in a lot of ways. Because, you know, we would think that we would be prioritizing the basics for our students, but in many ways we don't.
Yeah. Students have to be able to eat. Cause if you're, if you're housing insecure, food insecure, regardless, you're not focused on your studies. So it's really hard to justify some budget items when it comes to issues like that. I mean, campus policing is one of them, but there's a list of things that we can go down and say, this is out of line with the very basic mission of education, right?
Right.
Teach, learn. Everybody, universally accepted. Yeah, it's hard to focus on learning when you're hungry, right? It's hard to focus on learning when you're not sure where you're going to sleep tonight, okay? I mean, and if you're not investing in that, I think as a campus, you've already told us what your priorities are.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that a lot of sometimes the justification for increasing these budgets and things like that are when we have big crime events, so mass shootings on campus, or we have high rates of sexual harm on campus. And I feel like that's often used as a justification, whether it be by the university or in conversation with colleagues. Like, if we explore alternatives and now there's a mass shooting, who's going to protect us, or who's going to protect our students from being sexually harmed? You know, what do you think about that? What are your thoughts around those kind of justifications?
Well, unfortunately, in this world, even though we've seen increased police budgets, both for K-12 school systems and for colleges and universities, it's pretty clear that we've seen an increase in mass shootings as well, right? And so it's not as if increased policing has prevented mass shootings, unfortunately. You know, that's an easy justification if, you know, the two things really lined up together. But they just don't, unfortunately. We see the news, and it's something I think about every day working on a college campus. I mean, you hear something loud enough, you're going to pause and look, because that's the world we're in, despite the hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions, that some campuses have for their campus police budgets. So there's that argument right there. Mm-hmm. But from a broader societal standpoint, we've got to rethink so many things, right? And that's probably even sort of access to guns, right? This is the issue becomes with campus policing. If there are still moments of sexual assault, and we see that's a national crisis right now, still moments of sexual assault, there are still mass shootings, which is another form of crisis right now. What then does increased police budgets actually protect? And in many cases, it's probably more about institution property than people. And so we've got these very expensive universities with state-of-the-art facilities, and there's a lot of attention toward this competitive arms race in American higher education, to where we all look the same and we're building new buildings. And we're interested in protecting that much more than people.
I like that you mentioned that, because it's really visible and becomes really clear as you see, and you know, these really high tech, you know, usually STEM related buildings being built on campus, and yet we still have sexual violence happening. Yet we still have students who are hungry, who don't have a place to live, who are staying in their cars, who have to sit in a parking lot on campus to connect to Wi-Fi. You know, these are, I feel like, the things that we could be addressing and doing something about with that money if it wasn't being diverted to policing as much as it is.
Yeah. And it's about the proportion, you know. Mm-hmm. That's I think that's how I started this conversation. I just want to come back to that, right? Mm-hmm. We've got such a uneven distribution of resources, right? And mm-hmm. that's really probably the most alarming thing, because again, I can talk about the history of campus policing, and I mentioned, right, campus police and sort of campus security that has been around for a long time, right? But it hasn't always been around. But it's sort of about the rapid expansion that's really sort of more bothersome about this, right? Sort of, so it's one of those things where it's like, wow, when you just look at budget items and look at the size of people and say, how many campus police officers do you have and compare it to full-time counselors on campus? It's almost universal. You've got more high-equipped police cars that cost as much as the salary of what a full-time counselor would be. So That's the shocking part, when you just look at, wow, we're so uneven in how we spend, right? Even if you didn't believe in complete abolition, right? Let me sort of talk to maybe most people, right? Because mm-hmm. I think it's hard to get most people on board with complete abolition, complete police off campus, right? Let's say that's difficult. But you still have to think, even if you're somewhere in the middle, the proportion of spending is really hard to justify, right? To how we're skewed one way so much toward these things and almost absent in regard to other things.
Absolutely. I'm glad you drove that point home, because I think it's something, you know, we've been talking about time and again, and it's come up in student-led panels and all kinds of things. When this, you know, you get to see the campus budget, it's pretty disturbing. Well, is there any final thoughts that you want to share with us today about this issue, or things you want the listeners to know that maybe we didn't touch on?
Well, the one thing I would say in parting is, think about the world around you, not necessarily with regard to institutional history, but think a lot about the social history of these institutions. And that's what's really at the heart of this conversation around campus policing, because institutions have a history of themselves. They have a justification for what they do as an institution. But the day-to-day experience is shaped by people. And that's the social history. That's the people's history of these institutions. And when we start paying more attention to the social history, we start to prioritize people in how we think about academia more than we prioritize the institution itself. And that's the big takeaway here. Whether you're currently in higher education, formerly in higher education, or never really engaged with higher education as simply a fan from afar, American colleges and universities impact your lives, because these are some of the largest real estate owners within any city or county. They have some of the largest budgets within any state or county. And they also employ probably a number of people in any sort of area. And so you're impacted by decisions on these campuses, whether you know it or not. And history reminds us of that. And we're seeing that today, and we'd be well served if we understood that connection between the past and present so that we can actually see a better future.
Thank you so much for spending time with us today, Professor Cole. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. Glad to be part of this conversation, and all the best.
You've just heard part one of a two-part series on alternatives to campus policing. Be sure to keep an eye out for part two, scheduled to be released this fall. Thank you for listening. We hope our ongoing conversations spark understandings, empathies, and motivation to join the struggle for a better future for all. You just listened to the Building Justice podcast. The information contained in this podcast, including its title and description, represent the views and opinions of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of Sacramento State, ChrisJ, and or the Building Justice podcast committee.
All the penalties and the rewards based on the actions. Now, time for Building Justice. Building Justice. Time.